Hello and welcome to the Majlis Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host in Washington, D.C. When Araf Yarel journalist is in jail, the other repeatedly harassed and several others remain scared to resume their reporting. Already at the bottom of all media freedom indexes, it appears that Turkmenistan further tightening its repressive measures against journalists. Across the border, Uzbekistan is host to a prisoner who is arguably longest-serving journalist in jail. A few weeks ago, authorities also put brother of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty reporter behind the bars. And this week, Kazakhstan arrested a journalist, and journalists are passing through unprecedentedly tough times in Tajikistan. In one word, these are tough days for journalists in the region in situation like this. What is it like to be reporting from Central Asia? What are the daily challenges of journalists? To put it bluntly, what is the cost of being a reporter in the region? To discuss all this, I'm delighted to be joined by Ida Schlager, a German journalist in Kazakhstan who has just deported from Uzbekistan. Ada, welcome to the Majlis.
Hello from Almaty.
Thank you very much for joining us, Ada. Also joining us, Steve Severdlo, Central Asia researcher at the Human Rights Watch. Steve, welcome to the Majlis.
Great to be back.
Very nice to have you. Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, is joining us today from Prague. Bruce, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Majlis. Before to kick off the debate, let me remind you, please feel free to amplify, expand or disagree directly with points other guests are making. Please don't wait for me to prompt you a question so that we have a lively debate today. So, Ada, let's start with you. I'm sorry to hear what you went through in Uzbekistan, but this is unfortunately a routine reality for reporters in Central Asia and also one of the reasons why we are talking about this topic today. Please tell us what happened in Uzbekistan.
Thank you again for having me here and for giving me the opportunity to talk about this story. Actually, really a story when a journalist himself got the story. I planned to go to Uzbekistan for the German public broadcaster, radio broadcasters, a couple of weeks before the elections, just to get the atmosphere of the country. So, of course, I had the hope, as probably other journalists as well, that maybe this transition period will give a kind of enlightenment or something that the authorities won't have such an eye on journalists because they are busy preparing the elections. But yes, as we all know now, I was wrong, unfortunately.
When that happened, Ida?
I went to Uzbekistan 2 weeks ago and I was detained 1 week ago, so I had 1 week to work in Tashkent. I was only in Tashkent. I planned to go further to the Fergana Valley, but I stayed for some days in Tashkent to have some interviews there. And so I was detained on Thursday, the 10th of November.
The guy from the security services, what did he or she say to you? How this has happened?
So actually, it was not only one guy, it was four of them. So they came right to the hotel where I lived early in the morning at 7 o'clock. And first I was called by the receptionist to come out because authorities were there to check my documents. I went down and there were these four of them and asked me to show my passport. They immediately took my passport and didn't give me the passport back. And they just told me to come with them because they had to further check my stay and the documents, and they kindly asked to get my luggage and they would take me with them. And then I went up again and had fortunately the opportunity to close my door, to lock my door and to pack my luggage and just to end the loading up of some the uploading of some files I had saved to the internet, and then they maybe after 15 minutes or something like this they came in I also had the possibility to call a friend of mine, a German friend of mine in Uzbekistan, to get the contact of the German embassy. And I called a friend of mine in Germany. She's connected with Reporters Without Borders, and I had discussed it before. So she told me if something would happen, I could call her night and day. So I did this. Unfortunately, she still slept. But yeah, so I got my luggage, and then I went down with them, and they took me to the police station.
Mm-hmm. And then?
Yeah, and then I had to wait for 2 hours, but the whole procedure went on actually the whole day. So they detained me all in all for 14 hours, including the court hearing at the end in the evening. It was in the night. And so you can imagine having me all the day there constantly asking. It was kind of pressure, of course. There was no violence or something like this, so they were still kind. To my surprise, I could keep my smartphone. So I was all the time actually on the line with friends in Germany, with Reporters Without Borders, and only in the afternoon the German embassy managed to send me someone, to send me the consul together with a translator of the embassy, and they got me out. But of course, because of this whole procedure and because it went on and went on hours and hours, they managed to get some material from me. So this was the quite dangerous part of it. Not dangerous for me actually, but for people, the local people to whom I had talked before.
Certainly, it looks like that they were following you when you were in Tashkent. It sounds like that from the way you are talking. So what's your feeling? What was it that irritated them?
So actually, my impression was not that they followed me from the beginning. Yes, I think that someone pointed me out. Someone of these people to whom I talked told them about me, either the hotel or someone of these interviewees. I suppose it was like that. I don't know. I don't believe that they followed me from entering the country. I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay. Thanks, God, that you are safe and back to Almaty, Ida. Please feel free, as Stephen Bruce, to prompt question to Ida if you have any. Otherwise, we'll move on.
No, not at the moment. I'd been in contact with Edda. She knows that I've had similar experiences in the past.
Mm-hmm. I think Edda's recent experience is really important. It's the first deportation of an international journalist since the interim president, Shavkat Mirziyoyev, has been installed in power. And I mean, it shows that it's business as usual in Uzbekistan for freedom of expression, freedom of the press, freedom of the media. In other words, there is no freedom of the media. This is a period when I think the government wants to be in a sort of honeymoon with the international community, with the rest of the world. And, you know, Shavkat Mirziyoyev has taken some pains to try to talk about the fact that the government has set up a complaints hotline for citizens to be in more direct touch, in a way trying to establish a narrative that there's a little bit more freedom, a little bit more openness in Uzbekistan. And what happened to Ada really belies that claim. And it shows that it's still open season on journalists, both international and, of course, the many journalists that are in prison. So I think her story is, you know, should remind us and the international community that the situation remains really grave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. May I absolutely agree with Steve. This is absolutely right. And I took it as a kind of a warning shot for us journalists and for the locals who are ready to talk to journalists. And I talked to a lot of people who told me the head changed or will change, but the system still remains the same. I absolutely agree. We have to keep this in mind. And of course, there are slight signs of change, but this will take a long, long time. So we still have this to keep in mind. And I just can say all journalists who are planning to go right now to Uzbekistan, be careful. And yes, keep in mind the responsibility for the locals.
Bruce, our colleagues in our Uzbekistan desk is passing through numerous challenges these days. What are your hearings in terms of latest?
Well, of course, we've been dealing with this for 20 years at least. You know, in the days when we did have a bureau, there were times where things were going bad in Uzbekistan, and we were reporting on that. And of course, that always triggered a response from the authorities. Sometimes they detained our people. Some of them even got thrown in jail. Of course, it was never for their reporting officially. There was always something, some other charge that they found, some trumped up charge that they leveled against them, and that's what got them in trouble. You know, these days we have to deal with through a series of sometimes stringers, and sometimes we're able to talk with locals or officials, you know, who always request anonymity, but we're still able to do some stuff. But even despite that, you know, I mean, the Uzbek government is aware of the names of the people who work in the Uzbek service, and they put pressure on any of their family members that are still around there. That's happened many times, and it's just happened again recently too. So, you know, we know that even if we're not physically in the country, as long as we're able to broadcast out there, the government in Tashkent will try to find some way of retaliating, you know, whether that's through, as I mentioned, relatives or friends, or just broadcasting things on television, which they did several years ago by providing the names and addresses of the names of the people on the radio in Azadlik, the Uzbek service, and then addresses of the relatives in Uzbekistan, you know, which was clearly like, you know, inciting anyone, any local, any person in Uzbekistan who felt that maybe they could ingratiate themselves with the government by coming and harassing the relatives of our people working here in Prague. So, you know, they've come at us on a number of levels.
Yeah, and can I just add to that among the thousands of people imprisoned on politically motivated charges in Uzbekistan, I count at least six people that we would characterize as journalists, you know, apart from human rights defenders and political activists, but journalists that are imprisoned. You, Mohammed, you mentioned the world's longest imprisoned journalist, Mohammed Bigjanov.
Right.
It's also important we remember his colleague who gets talked about a lot less often, which is Yusuf Ruzi Muradov. Both the two of them were both kidnapped and brought from Ukraine and brought to Uzbekistan, where they were tortured and have been imprisoned for 17 years, which is just absolutely a remarkable case, something that, you know, has gotten a lot of attention. And still, Mirziyoyev, despite an amnesty, an announcement of amnesty, has not freed these people. In addition to those two, there's Salehjon Abdurakhmanov, who's from Karakol, Pakistan, who's been in prison now since 2008. Then there was the muckraking anti-corruption reporter Dilmurod Saidov, and also another reporter, Gairat Mikhliboyev, charged with membership in a religious extremist group, and of course the brother of your colleague, Aziz Yusupov. So that's just six right there.
Yes, and may I add also, I'm sorry for jumping in, unfortunately I have to confirm this feeling. I'm just in Almaty now doing some researching further on this story. So I'm looking for Uzbeks here in Almaty, and it's so difficult to get them because they are all so frightened. It's really true. So the grip of the secret service, even in the neighboring countries, is really strong, and people are just afraid of talking to us.
Also, I have something to add to that. Is for this discussion, I was in contact with at least four Uzbek journalists. At the end, you are just witnessing none of them showed up today in the discussion. So it looks like this pressure against the journalist. Yes, it is very visible in Uzbekistan. Also, seems to be as a regional phenomenon. Bruce, Turkmen authorities have been taking quite an outrageous stance on already repressive environment against few remaining independent reporters there. What's the latest on this front, in Turkmenistan front?
Well, yeah, for instance, you have Sultana Chilova, who's been helping us out a little bit and doing some reporting for us. And, you know, she's been harassed, you know, to the point of like getting actually physically attacked. And there's photos of her with, you know, bruises all over her arms from these attacks by somebody. And this happened actually twice in the span of the last month. She's 67 years old. You know, and she came to the attention of, or at least came to the attention of Turkmen authorities for trying to photograph long lines outside stores for people trying to just buy flour and sugar and things like that. And then that the response to that was the first attack on her, and then they came after her again. I believe she was even in like a medical treatment. She was in a doctor's facility to try to get treatment for for the injuries she'd had from the first from the first incident, and then some women in the hospital who at first apparently had beat up somebody and harassed and hit somebody who they thought was her, and it ended up not being her. But then they finally tracked her down and went after her again. So, you know, like I said, two times in less than a month, and for just taking photographs, you know, not even like for an actual audio report or anything like that, but just trying to take photographs of people in line. And of course, this is something that all across the country, Turkmen citizens are aware is going on. So it wasn't, you know, the Turkmen government, I guess, is trying to keep it secret, but it's a poorly kept secret. And we know Saparmurat Nepeskuliyev, of course, who was also trying to take pictures of resorts and the dachas of some of the government officials there out there by Abaza. And he simply vanished, and his sister finally tracked him down, and he was in prison and quickly sentenced and jailed for drug possession and with intent to sell too. And, you know, that's been more than a year ago. So, you know, and we're one of the only people or only organizations that are broadcasting to Turkmenistan. And that's two of our people, you know, in just a little more than a year's time who have been harassed. And it's very hard, as you could imagine, to get people to actually want to do any reporting for us, because these are the exactly the kind of warnings the Turkmen authorities want to send to everybody that don't work for us, or it could be you.
These were two of the few remaining reporters still working in Turkmenistan, but you already know, like, several of them stopped working for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, or any other organization because of the intensified and regular pressure by the authorities. Steve, can't ignore that the situation in Tajikistan, closure of a newspaper and private news agency just over the past 1 month is another major development that we should discuss. So what are you hearing from there in terms of the intensified pressure, the regional phenomena against journalists or the human rights activists there?
Well, you know, that's right. I think, in fact, we on this very podcast, I think we were forecasting trends about the evolution of the crackdown inside Tajikistan a few months ago. I think we were talking about the crackdown on lawyers in an earlier podcast, and we talked about how the next chapter would very likely be journalists, and that came true. You know, Toj News and Nikol were very important outlets. You know, just to make a little bit more concrete the contribution of some of these journalists and how courageous the work they do is, recently there's been a trial, high-profile trial, of one of the Tajikistan's most prominent lawyers, Buzurg Miryorov, who was recently convicted on fabricated charges to 23 years in jail. And in his final days of the trial, when he was making his speech in his own defense, he held up a copy of the newspaper Nigol and an article that Nigol was courageous enough to write about his case. And they've been covering, you know, what's been happening with the closure of the most prominent opposition party, the Islamic Renaissance Party. And he held up this paper in court and he said, you know, these courageous people, a few of them in the world and international organizations, human rights groups, are talking about my case. And they've been talking about how unjust my prosecution is. And I, you know, and he, you know, that's a sign of just how important it is to have journalists bear witness to these important trials, these terrible developments, and to have these outlets fall by the wayside, I think it has such a chilling effect on everyone else. I mean, I think, you know, there are other dominoes yet to fall in Tajikistan, but having the journalists go quiet, including the pressure on your bureau, is terrible. In fact, a lesser reported case in Tajikistan was the imprisonment of a journalist who was Gulmurod Halimzadeh, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he was in prison for a little less than 2 years on fabricated fraud charges. He was released, but it was the first case that we had ever seen in Tajikistan of a journalist actually going to jail. And so a lot of lines have been crossed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think what's happening, there's a lot of pressure on Asia Plus, which is the most important independent news website still operating in Tajikistan. And, you know, we just hope and pray that the international community is going to be pushing back on all of these cases and making clear to Tajikistan and to the other governments that this is just absolutely unacceptable behavior, especially on the cusp of these changes in Uzbekistan with the elections and other opportunities to raise these issues.
Right. In Kazakhstan, Ida, Kazakhstan just arrested another journalist this week. This follows famous trial of head of the Kazakhstan's Journalists Union. Things are not obviously quite there. What's happening?
As I was following this case here, was arrested for accusations regarding these gas zakaze. So in Kazakhstan, you have, as in other countries, obviously also the practice that the government is paying media for covering stories, obviously in a really positive way. And in connection with these, with this practice, he was arrested because he was accused of corruption cases.
Bruce, is Kyrgyzstan all right amongst all this storm?
Well, for the moment, it's certainly not as bad as it is in the other four countries. Although I was kind of concerned that on November 7th, I believe it was, which was when Kyrgyzstan marked the day of information and the press, that President Atambayev called on journalists to refrain from, quote, misleading, unquote, information. And this is kind of one of those signs, you know, that journalists would interpret this not just in Central Asia, but in other places too. When the leader of the country starts saying things like that, it's a cautionary note. It's letting you know that you shouldn't go too far, and you better think real careful about how your wording is in these stories and what exactly you're covering as a story. So it's kind of a veiled threat against covering politics or his administration in a negative way. You know, he's been a little bit easier with the press, but traditionally in Kyrgyzstan, although they've always had an independent media, they're every now and then someone writes a story and finds out that there are limits. Let's not forget that Kyrgyzstan, I think, was the first country in Central Asia to jail a journalist and prohibit her from practice. That was part of the sentence, was she couldn't practice journalism for 18 months, which had never happened in the world anywhere. You know, so they kind of go through these cycles. They get a new leader in. Usually they're pretty good about this. They're open. They support independent media in their country. But as criticism keeps building up and they keep having to endure, stories about misgovernance, things like that in their country, eventually they get to the point like, you know, where we see Atambayev. These are the early warnings, you know, warning the press basically there are limits and be careful about what you're reporting. It's always couched in the phrasing of, don't use misleading information or false information or anything like that. But this is where it starts. And we know that Kyrgyzstan has a couple of two big events coming up. They have the referendum and local elections this December 11th. And then they got presidential elections next year. And, of course, these are things that are very important to President Atambayev. So I don't think it was a coincidence that, you know, all of a sudden he raised this issue.
And I think as far as Kyrgyzstan's concerned, in thinking of Eda's experience, I think the southern part of Kyrgyzstan also falls in a way into its own category. We saw about a year and a half ago the actual detention and trial of an American journalist for so-called extremism. If we remember the case of Umar Farouk, who is a freelancer doing research on sensitive topics in Osh, asking questions about ISIS and other controversial topics. And we've seen a lot of different cases where people that go to Osh and ask the wrong questions can get detained and get deported. So Kyrgyzstan's record is far from clean, as Bruce is discussing.
It's not only journalists, but journalistic tools such as the internet is also under scrutiny these days. Freedom House just put out its annual Freedoms on the Net report. When you look into their findings, you find no encouraging signs in its Central Asia chapters. So, obviously, the big question is why all this is happening and why now. But before to get into that part of our debate, let me recap with our panelists today joining the Majlis on the cost of reporting from Central Asia are Ida Schlager, German reporter in Kazakhstan, Steve Severlo, Central Asia researcher at the Human Rights Watch, Bruce Pioneer, editor of Kishlag OOZ, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, and I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis Central Asia podcast here in Washington, D.C. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Majlis. Needless to say that things has never been easy for independent reporters in Central Asia, and therefore you have report after report, like the Freedom House's report, placing Central Asia among the most repressive nations on earth in terms of press freedom in human rights. But as we discussed earlier, things are getting even nastier lately with the increasing number of journalists silenced with various pressure tactics, including putting them behind the bars, pressuring them and their family members, harassment and intimidations and so on. Why Central Asian authorities are so angry against journalists lately, Bruce?
Well, all of these countries are going through some particularly rough times, economically speaking, and in some cases you could argue, and I certainly have, that Turkmenistan and Tajikistan are essentially failing states at the moment, and of course these are the kind of things that governments in the region certainly don't want their own media reporting about at all, or even raising that possibility. So there's a need to make sure that they're in control of all the information, and that's generally been true since they've been independent. The governments there would prefer to be the ones providing the narrative of what's happening in the country, how well it's doing, how hard the officials are working for the country, obviously it's kind of a doomed to fail in some ways, because the people that live there see the reality of what's going on, and then they see what's being reported on state media, and they understand that what they read in state media doesn't reflect what they're living through on the ground. So like I said, it's kind of a policy doomed to failure in the end, but they still stick with that, and they want to. Tajikistan, of course, well, actually Tajikistan and Turkmenistan are both do the same thing, where although it's obvious that socioeconomic conditions are deteriorating, the line from the government is still everything is great. We're so lucky to be living in this country. Our leader's watching out for us,
Everyone obviously has a different interpretation for this. Let me take one more opinion on this question. In your opinion, Steve, what is causing their crackdown against reporters lately?
Well, journalists speak truth to power, and they witness. I mean, I think it has to do with whatever issues in particular happen to irritate the government the most at that moment. So, I mean, in Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan, we have the cotton harvests proceeding, and we've seen a number of journalists detained and photojournalists taking pictures, because those images are really damaging. In fact, for example, right now across the world, from Uzbekistan in Brussels, we have a vote that's set to take place on whether or not Europe's going to give trade privileges to Uzbek cotton coming into their markets, the textile protocol. And I think the pictures that journalists are taking from the cotton fields are really damaging. And the Uzbek government sees its interests on the line and wants to prevent those from getting out. I think, corruption, any discussions of certainly now not the first family, but the former first family, the Karimova, Lola Karimova and her business interests, Gulnara Karimova and her business interests, and all the corruption scandals are extremely volatile subjects and really sensitive and important to these governments. And rather than take an approach of having a discussion about these things and allowing it to play out, the governments are taking a hard line. And, when I mentioned southern Kyrgyzstan, the issues there are a little bit different. The recruitment for ISIS, extremism, any discussions about LGBT. I mean, the list is quite long of topics that these governments don't feel comfortable discussing. And in fact, you recently asked a question, Mohammed, when you had a visiting Uzbek official in Washington, which I thought was a really good experiment, which was to ask the government if they're willing to consider allowing Radio Free Europe to set up shop again in Tashkent and allow our organization, Human Rights Watch, back in the country. I think the refrain was, we'll be open to anybody who doesn't disagree with us and who doesn't really challenge us. And, I think that's something that stands in the way of all of these governments and countries making progress and actually advancing to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Could I add something, Mohammed?
Sure.
So I absolutely agree. I think it's the fear of losing the control. And with all these social media today, people get a look outside, of course. But I have to say, for instance, when I was detained, the technical knowledge of these police men there was quite frightening, I have to say. So they didn't have the cables. They had an old personal computer there, so they couldn't even use my cards and my equipment. But nevertheless, they obviously managed to get control over social media. So I was told actually nothing is secure in Uzbekistan, and no one knows how they check Facebook or do they check Facebook, or WhatsApp is working only temporarily in Uzbekistan, Skype the same. So no one knows, and everyone is suspecting. They are listening and seeing all. Yeah, so listening to all and seeing all. So this is also one side of the story. I think.
Ada, how are you dealing with this new level of challenge as a reporter in Central Asia?
Yeah, this is quite a good question, because this warning shot for me now, this experience with Uzbekistan, told me one thing. We as reporters, the locals as foreign reporters, we have to be prepared better than good. So technically, logistically, even in juristic terms, we have to prepare. And this, I think, is very important. So I have to check my technical equipment now, and this is quite important, I think. You have to be aware of all.
I'm aware that Steve, you are not the UN, but in the meantime, you see that the level of crackdown is on different stage these days in Central Asia. You definitely need a new tool to respond to this new challenge and new situation. What are the new tools you have in your disposal to be able to continue what you do in terms of protecting or raising awareness voices against pressure on journalists and human rights there?
Well, you know, I mean, the issue, of course, is that you have to be in contact with primary sources of information, whether or not you're a human rights activist or you're a journalist. The only way to get the story and make sure it's credible and verify facts and be professional in the work that we do is to verify and confirm with multiple sources. And that has been difficult in Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan in particular for a long time now. And so we rely on all manner of technology. We use encryption. You know, we try as best as we can to meet with people outside the country when we can, or you know. And I think there's, it all depends on what you're looking at. But I think the main thing is there also has to be financial support. There has to be, right now we just had an election in the United States where, we have a Congress which is going to be revisiting issues of its support for organizations like Radio Free Europe and Voice of America and then across the ocean and the BBC. I think those services have to be really robust, and they have to be expanded, in fact. And I mean, this is somewhat, maybe somewhat of a related issue, but I think we need to have media that's also reporting in local languages so that even the government officials start to see the value of that reporting. I mean, they probably won't admit it openly, but a lot of Uzbek officials read your reports and Voice of America and other and turn to it for indispensable information. I think over time, that power of information and also the increasing use of social media is, as Bruce said earlier, I think is going to show this current strategy as a failed one, and they're going to have to at some point accept what the world in the 21st century actually looks like.
If I could just jump in with one thing too. When we had the protests in Kazakhstan earlier this year, Peter Leonard, who's a friend of ours from the Majlis, of course, was discussing that a little bit on Twitter too. And he said, isn't it too bad that Kazakhstan didn't have a real independent media, because the protest all started, evolved into something else, but it all started because of a rumor that the Chinese were going to come in and lease land under this this privatization land reform scheme that the Kazakh government was doing. And he was right. If they did have a credible independent media that the government wasn't trying to downplay and deride all the time, that some an outlet that people trusted that said, look, the Chinese aren't going to come in and buy all the land, that's not what's going to happen, then they would have been able to prevent the protest from even starting to begin with. And of course, the protest, like I said, evolved into an anti-government protest. But it was just because the only source that people had was state media saying, don't worry, it's nothing bad's going to happen. And they've been saying that, for years and years. Well, and lately, of course, people have watched as their economic situation went into steep decline. So if they had an independent media, some independent media sources saying, These rumors are not true. Someone credible that the people trusted, it would have stopped all those problems right away.
They do what they have been doing for years to crack down against messenger instead of dealing with the real issues or situation on the ground. So any suggestion, what are the ways to deter the Central Asian leaders from what they are doing, Steve?
Well, you know, I think there have to be actual meaningful consequences for this behavior. So, I mean, a recent story, I think, is very important. It's important that the international community raise these issues and challenge this narrative, as we were discussing in the beginning, that Uzbekistan is improving when you have things as blatant and aggressive as this going on. I think there have to be discussion, certainly for those that are imprisoned. Interim President Mirziyayev should, with the stroke of a pen, release all journalists and all others imprisoned on politically motivated charges. He's talked about an amnesty related to the Constitution Day holiday in Uzbekistan. I think that he needs to be held to account. There should be a withholding of financial assistance, IMF loans, World Bank programs, military assistance from the U.S. And the European Union just had a human rights dialogue with Kazakhstan and with Uzbekistan. So these are issues that have to be raised consistently, and they have to be raised publicly. You know, and I think we all have to do our job, as Ada suggested, to empower local journalists, citizen journalists. We need to protect them. We need to constantly talk about the dangers that they're facing and, you know, what they're putting on the line. We need to do everything we can to support their freedom of speech.
In this context, I have an interesting point. I had a talk to a friend of mine these days who lived for a couple of months in Uzbekistan who is really in love with Uzbekistan. And she told me maybe you shouldn't report every story. So this is quite an interesting point for me, of course, as a journalist, because I want to report and I want to tell the stories. And even the locals told me now in Uzbekistan, they told me, yes, please use this material, show the world what's happening here. But this friend of mine, she told me there is going on so much under the surface, and sometimes even because media are not covering these stories. So stories like getting locals out of the country with the help of NGOs. We have still two German NGOs there. And she pointed out that they do a great job, and the changes, especially in Uzbekistan, obviously, are done very, very slowly. But she has the hope that something is changing, and maybe we can keep this in mind as well. I'm not really patient. I cannot wait. So, and I'm on the other side, actually. I'm a journalist. I want to report. Right. But maybe this is also a point.
Yeah, definitely. Bruce, let's end the debate with a brief point of view. What should be done to stop Central Asian leaders from doing what they are doing these days against journalists?
Yeah, that's tough. You'd like to say that outside pressure is the way to get on them and to keep hammering home that, you know, independent press, you know, a free press is a benefit to them if they're really doing a good job. You know, the only place that kind of criticism is going to come from is the West. And of course, Central Asia, as they always say, is the crossroads of the Eurasian continent. So, you know, you have China vying for influence there in Russia and more, ever more the people in the Arab world and stuff. And they're not going to back that message, because actually what the Central Asians doing are pretty much exact what they're doing at home. So it's a battle. There's no doubt about it. You know, that I always thought that one of the biggest problems with the way the Central Asian governments act toward the media is that they're just used to, you know, the dictatorship kind of style, where they're going to tell you something and they don't expect to be challenged. If they could defend their policies, and that's one of the beautiful things about a democracy, is not to give orders that this is going to be that way. But when you're challenged, you have to be able to defend that, your decision, and explain why it's good for the country or why it's good for people or something. And they're not used to that. They just don't do that. When they get challenged, they get really nervous, because they don't think that's the job of anyone to do. They have something they want done in the country, and it's supposed to be done, and that's the end of it. And when things end up badly, as they're ending up in various ways across Central Asia now, then they turn and look for some poor fall guy, you know, to blame the whole thing on, when it's really their policies that are failing. They should listen more to the independent media and think more about how they're going to explain this, knowing that they're going to be challenged on some of these points. It would help everyone if they would be able to do that.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak OOZ, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, for your insightful comments. And also, big thanks, Ada Schlager, a German reporter in Kazakhstan, and Steve Severdo, Central Asia researcher at Human Rights Watch. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining the debate today.
Thank you.
That's it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.